This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Canadians tonight at Bell MTS Place shortly after 6 p.m. puck drop, the final regular season home game on the season. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From thescore.com, he's their national hockey writer. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend, John Mattis. John, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys. The pleasure's always mine.
I appreciate that, John. As we sit here, 1 week or so to go in the regular season. It ends, of course, next Saturday. We have some great divisional races and great playoff races still to come. Looking at the Eastern Conference, as you're based in Toronto, the Montreal Canadiens are currently tied with the Blue Jackets, but the Blue Jackets hold down the final playoff spot. The Hurricanes 1 point ahead. From your perspective, one of those three teams is not going to make the playoffs. Which of those three teams do you think is going to miss it?
I think it's Montreal. I think, you know, anything can happen, quote unquote. This is sports, the greatest reality TV show possible. But if you look at who they're facing, they got Winnipeg, obviously, tonight, Tampa Bay, Washington, and Toronto. That's the end of their schedule. So not only is their competition difficult, like those are, if you look at it, I don't know, those are all top 10 teams at worst. And also they, you know, Columbus has a game in hand on them, and Columbus also has the first tiebreaker, which is Rowe. So, I mean, it's going to be tough for Montreal. They basically have to win out the string and hope that Columbus and or Carolina stumble. And even then, I mean, the chances are pretty slim if Columbus wins, you know, three out of their five games and don't look great in them. I mean, they're still probably in. So I think Montreal didn't do themselves any favors by losing 6-2 the other night to Columbus, which was really the game of the season in terms of drama, in terms of playoff implications with, you know, that really swinging the situation at the bottom of the Eastern Conference playoff race. So if I'm picking one, and I don't even think it's that hard, I think it's Montreal, just based on when you look at the wins and losses, the competition coming up. You know, for example, like Columbus is facing Nashville, difficult. Buffalo, not so much. Boston, difficult. Rangers, not so much. And then Ottawa for their last game of the season. So, yeah, Montreal has their work cut out for them. And at the end of the day, like, if they don't make it, I think that it's actually the best-case scenario for hockey fans, obviously not in Montreal, but elsewhere with Columbus going hard at the deadline and really loading up. That's nice to see because maybe we'll see that next year. Maybe other GMs go, hey, it wasn't so bad for that Yarmolka Kalainen decided to put his neck out there and acquire a lot of assets and really go for it when he doesn't exactly have a championship-caliber team. So, the Canadians have been a nice story considering coming into the season no one – had them anywhere near the playoffs in terms of expectations. So even if they miss it, I think it's still a pretty good season for Montreal, but the chances of them actually making it are quite slim.
Now, John, obviously, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs are locked into third. We know they can't catch the Boston Bruins, and nobody's going to catch the Leafs for third in that Atlantic division. And, you know, they're going to get some good news tonight with the return of Travis Dermott, and then of course Jake Gardner has started skating, and you know both of those defensemen have been out of the lineup for quite some time now. But my question for you is, even though you know Jake Gardner was a bit of the whipping boy there in Toronto after that 7-game series against the Bruins, do the Leafs really have any shot at beating the Bruins in the first round if those two players aren't playing at their top level? Because the defense, I think you'd agree right now, it's been really thin there on the left side for Mike Babcock.
Oh, it's been thin everywhere, and you make a good point. And it's funny being in Toronto, and Jake Gardner is really like the number one whipping boy. Whether it's you know what happened last year in the playoffs with Boston, or a couple of mishaps this year where he looked pretty bad on highlight reels the next morning, he's just the guy that everyone points to. And you know, I would take him every day of the week, considering you know there's a lot of net positive to take from Gardner and his game. Yes, he has some flaws, but I mean, he's a very good NHLer. But what I'm trying to get to is that he's been out for an extended period of time here, and now all of a sudden, you know, the fan base is like, when's Gardner coming back? We can't survive without Gardner. It's just funny how, you know, you don't know what you have till it's gone. That sort of cliche. And it's been rough the last, you know, I don't know, 10, 12 games for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, not even just losing Gardner, but not having Dermott, going through a weird sort of spell with some slumps up front. Kasperi Kapanen's had a really tough go here. Austin Matthews has looked really good, but not exactly, you know, putting up 20 points in 10 games. He's closer to, you know, 12 and 13. Like, he's looked really good, but he hasn't exactly hiked his production up to a dominant level. Freddie Anderson's had his difficulty lately. Like, things are not as too rosy in Leafland at this point, which is a little concerning if you're a supporter of the team, because really they only have 5 games left, including tonight. And Ottawa, who they're playing, they've had trouble with them this year. For whatever reason, Ottawa's given them a headache. They've not been able to handle Ottawa's, I guess you could say, lack of a concern for anything defense, kind of playing run and gun. And it's just killed them for kind of weird reasons. But without Gardner and Dermott, even though you could argue both have their flaws, especially when you consider Dermott so young and he's still sort of learning how to play in the NHL. You know, even though they sort of get pointed at as guys who need to bring more to the table, when they're out of the lineup, that Toronto defense is right near the bottom of the list in terms of impact on the game, or positive impact on the game, I should say. So, they're really hoping that Gardner can slide right in and doesn't have a big adjustment.
Did we just lose John?
I think we lost John.
I think we just lost John. Not sure exactly how that happened. It seems like his phone may have cut out there very briefly.
Hey, sorry, guys. Sorry.
There you go. You're back. Welcome back.
Yeah, anyways, just to finish the point, I think that, you know, the Leafs have hit a serious rough patch here, and some of it can be related to the defense and the injuries there. But overall, I think they need to get their act together before the playoffs.
John Mattis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Canadians shortly after 6 p.m., a game you can hear on TSN 1290.
John, the storm surge came to an end a couple nights ago. I consider me a fan of it. I enjoyed it. I thought it brought a lot of joy to fans there in Carolina. But it almost overshadowed the story that is the Carolina Hurricanes this season. Just how impressive has this team been? And considering this team hasn't made the playoffs, I think, in 9 straight seasons, just how important is finishing off strong and making out the playoffs for this young team?
Yeah, wouldn't it be just a complete, I don't know, just a sad story if somehow they fall out of the playoff race and don't make it? Because you mentioned the drought, that's one thing. And there's also the fact that they've had great underlying numbers for the past, 5 years, and they've never been able to put it together. Now they're finally starting to produce up to their sort of standards in terms of Corsi and all those numbers that suggest that they're a good team. They have the goaltending finally with Curtis McElhinney. Does that hold up, you know, towards next year or even in the first round? I don't know. He's if you want to call him a late bloomer, that might be even underselling it, considering his age and this being his finest performance at the NHL level. So there's been like good story after good story coming out of Carolina. You mentioned the storm surge. Obviously, it's grabbed the attention of the entire NHL and really the sporting world, kind of not to the same extent as the Vegas Golden Knights last year, but sort of transcending or the NHL breaking through its little bubble. And people noticing outside of hockey, which is nice to see. They've got that going. You know, Andrei Sveshnikov has quietly had a really good rookie season. Sort of, you know, the kid gloves were on him for the first half of the season by Rod Brind'Amour, and it looks like that was a pretty smart plan considering what he's done lately. You know, Justin Williams, another older guy. I talked about Curtis McElhinney. Here's another guy that's still contributing, still important to that organization at such an old age. And Sebastian Aho has, you know, if he was in, you know, 20 other different markets of greater prominence, he would be a superstar in this league. Put him in Winnipeg, put him in Toronto, wherever, and we would not be, you know, going a day without talking about him. He's an absolute stud. And, you know, they have their warts. They don't have a ton of secondary scoring. That defense is obviously great at moving the puck forward and overall very steady. But the goaltending, even though Mac Lane is on a bit of a run here this season, still some question marks there. So they're far from a perfect team, but considering what they've had to deal with in Carolina, this season's gone pretty damn well.
John, last question for you here. The Colorado Avalanche picked up that huge win over the Arizona Coyotes in the shootout, even though, you know, the Coyotes pick up a point. It looks like they're in tough to make the Western Conference playoffs this year. And, you know, you think back to a month and it looked like there was a good chance that the Avalanche were going to miss the playoffs. And, you know, I have a two-part question for you on the Avalanche here. When you talk about, you know, this team, I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, expect the Calgary Flames to be the favorite in the first round if they end up playing the Avalanche in the first round. But do you think the Avalanche are getting enough credit for the season that they'd have and how difficult they might make it for the Flames in the first round?
Yeah, it's I can't remember the season. It was 2 or 3 years ago when Colorado made it, and it was sort of Nathan MacKinnon's coming out party, because in the first round, I cannot remember who they played. He just torched the first round, and kind of all of a sudden people are going, Nathan MacKinnon's elite. And now we're in his prime, and the only way that the Colorado Avalanche will beat the Calgary Flames is if Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, and Gabe Landeskog continue their terrific season. And because after that, to be honest, when you look at the Colorado Avalanche, whether it's on defense, which they have one of the worst groups really out there, period, or if you look at their forward depth, there's a lot of holes, and they're really a one-line team that has Semyon Varlamov that can save some games. Obviously, Philip Grubauer. Like, they have good goaltending most nights. So there is a chance there. I mean, I would say it's, you know, like Calgary has its warts too. So I would say that's not as nearly lopsided as whoever Tampa ends up facing, which will probably be Columbus. I think that'll be a bit of a cakewalk for Tampa. Whereas Colorado, I mean, Nathan MacKinnon, you could argue, is a top five player. And when he gets going, there's not many that are as dynamic or as explosive. So Colorado, I don't love them as a team, but they could make some noise in the playoffs.
John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. Sorry about the little mute button action there.
All good.
No worries, John. We're just glad we had you back there.
Thanks. Have a good one, guys.
All right. Thanks, John. Take care. All righty. You've been waiting all morning for it. It's time for our Saturday morning You Bet Your Jet Will Call You bonus play. If you texted You Bet and your phone number to 129090 at any point this past week, we could be calling you right now. Stand by as we reach out to play You Bet Your Jet next on your radio home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Time for the Saturday morning You Bet Your Jet contest. Welcome back to TSN Radio 1290. Let's go to our qualifier on the phone. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hello.
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 What is your name?
Eves.
Welcome. Yep. You are welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You are our contestant on this week's edition of You Bet Your Jet. Where are you from in Winnipeg, Eves?
I'm from just out of town in Lorette.
In Lorette. Wonderful. Nice. Glad to hear that you're listening to us this morning in Lorette. Earlier this week, you texted You Bet and your number to 129090. We drew your number from all those who entered. And just for participating, you've won a 10-inch spicy pierogi pizza from Boston
Nice.
Pizza. You're just for being our Will Call You bonus qualifier on this Saturday morning. Now it's an opportunity for you to win some great prizes and big cash. Here's how it works on this Saturday morning. Today on You Bet Your Jet, we are featuring players who are IC free. That means they have no I's or C's in their names. You have your choice of Adam Lowry, Blake Wheeler, or Brandon Tanev.
I'll go with Lowry today, please.
You're going to go with Adam Lowry. Yep. Okay.
Like it.
We're going to begin with a skill testing question, Eves. Eves calling us from Lorette. You get it right and you win an extra large classic blue Hockey Night in Canada blazer. One of those classic blue Hockey Night in Canada blazers. Those are a quality gift. Here's the question. We asked Adam Lowry, what was the first concert he ever attended? Did he say Backstreet Boys, or did he say Alice Cooper?
Oh, I wouldn't have a clue. I'm going to guess Backstreet Boys.
You're going to go with Backstreet Boys for Adam Lowry. Let's find out what the first contest, the first concert, that Adam Lowry ever attended was.
Hi, this is Adam Lowry. What was the first concert I ever attended? The Backstreet Boys.
Right on. Way to go, Eve.
Boy, congratulations. That was not an easy question.
No, it was not.
That could have gone either way.
Yeah.
You take a deep breath. That was a solid victory. You've won. So let's just recap the prizes so far. So far, you've won a spicy pierogi pizza from Boston Pizza. That's quality. You've won a blue Hockey Night in Canada blazer. Now we'll go to the big cash round.
We'll play a random
highlight from this season. You got your fingers crossed?
Hard.
You got your toes crossed?
I got my toes crossed and everything.
There we go.
Eves, are you sitting down right now?
No.
Well, hey, do what you got to do, right?
Yeah.
I'll lean.
If Adam Lowry scores, you're going to win $1,000, Eves. Let's go to the audio. Let's roll it.
Kopp will chase a loose puck to the corner. Kopp and Pollock after it again. Tyler Myers in from the line. Lowry with the opportunity and a big left pad save made by Ben Bishop.
Eves, I'm sorry. Oh, I had my fingers crossed and my toes crossed as well. But
Eves was hot there. I thought for sure he was going to win the grand.
I got to say, it's not a bad Saturday morning, though. You end up with that spicy pierogi pizza from our friends at Boston Pizza and that classic blue Hockey Night in Canada blazer. Eves, congratulations. Thanks for listening. Thanks for texting. You bet to 1290-90. We have another contest coming up Monday morning with the big show. Thank you, Eves.
Well, thank you very much.
Take care. Yes. Congratulations again. That was the Saturday morning bonus edition of You Bet Your Jet. Like I said, stay tuned. Monday morning with the big show, another opportunity for somebody to walk away, hopefully with some great prizes and $1,000 cash.
That's 0 for 4 now.
I know, but we got...
I want to give out some hard cash.
There's a good chance that Eves could be wearing that jacket in the crowd.
It's possible.
True.
I mean, who knows? We'll be able to maybe spot him or something. But, I mean, yeah, it's 0 for 4 on the big money, but there's been a lot of winners on the big money so far. But it's also, you know, we're giving away some good prizes, though, boys.
We're giving away some good prizes.
Yeah, exactly. And that was not an easy question.
No,
we gave away tickets to that Jets-Rangers game that didn't exist.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, if you were in Eve's position there, were you going to choose Alice Cooper or were you going to choose Backstreet Boys?
No, I was going to go with Backstreet Boys. I would have. Alice Cooper was just too far out there.
A little too random for like a teenager.
I would think first concert, he's probably like 11 or 12.
Yeah, it's when I went.
A little aggressive to watch a guy, you know, do what Alice Cooper does.
Ezzy, what were you going to vote for?
Well, I didn't have a vote. If you had been
in Eve's shoes.
I mean, well, first off, he got it right, so I don't know why.
Okay, forget. I'm not even asking
no,
you.
I was going to say Backstreet Boys. I feel like Adam Lowry's a guy that likes rock and roll, like classic rock and roll.
Well,
but
if you heard Brandon Tanev on the station yesterday. Tanev was on with Huss and Rick. Apparently, Adam Lowry makes a mean banana bread.
Okay.
Like, because he's a big baker. He got one of those fancy KitchenAid mixers. And
and that was what he bought with his first NHL contract.
Yeah.
You think he puts chocolate chips in his banana bread?
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I would. You know, we might need to investigate a little bit deeper on this topic. But
Adam Lowry could do well to bring a plate of these banana bread up to the press box.
I wouldn't say no to that. Anyways, let's look at the playoff position. We've been talking about it, the playoff race. We start with that victory last night by the Colorado Avalanche. They win in overtime to move 3 points up on the Arizona Coyotes. Each team has 4 games remaining. That was a game the Avs actually were up 2-0 late in that game.
Yep.
The Coyotes tie it up by scoring 2 goals in the final few minutes.
Both from OEL.
Yeah, both from Oliver Ekman-Larsson. A huge point for the Coyotes, but a huge 2 points from the Avalanche. It would take a pretty big collapse right now for the Avs to miss the playoffs.
Right, and I mean, I was talking about it off air with you, Drew, before the show, but I mean, Gabe Landeskog, boys, nobody thought he was coming back this early. It looked like, you know, the earliest he was going to come back was maybe midway through the first round if the Avalanche, of course, got into the playoffs, and he assisted, I think it was on Nathan MacKinnon's goal. I know that he picked up an assist on one of the goals, and you know, you mentioned the Coyotes get the 1 point, but at this point in the season, I mean, you don't gain 2 points. That's what you needed to do if you're the Coyotes, and the Coyotes have been a really nice story this year. I think Rick Tocchet has done an excellent job, you know, for a team that has had so many injuries. You know, we've talked about it before, Antti Raanta, you know, being the big one there, but they had, you know, the injury with Nick Schmaltz. He's still out for the season. So
should make note, you just mentioned Nick Schmaltz. He just signed a contract extension seconds ago, apparently, a 7-year contract extension with the Arizona Coyotes worth $5.85 million per season.
Well, and, you know, good for him. He's a really good hockey player. And
acquired from the Blackhawks earlier this season in exchange for Dylan Strowman and Brendan Perlini.
Right. And, you know, you wonder if, you know, Nick Schmaltz was in the lineup, if they would have a couple of more wins. Mm-hmm. And that would be the difference between, you know, making the playoffs and not making the playoffs, right? So, I mean, it looks like the Avalanche, as you mentioned, are going to get that second wild card spot. And, you know, going back to John Mattis in the interview last segment, or I guess, that was last segment, when you're talking about, you know, the Avalanche, I mean, we know they're not a very good defensive team, and the Flames are, with the exception of the Lightning, maybe the best offensive team. But, you know, this Avalanche team can score goals in bunches as well. And when you're talking about Nathan MacKinnon, I mean, he's got 95 points, and it seems like nobody's really talking about him, right? And that's maybe because, you know, Nikita Kucherov has 120-plus, Dave. But,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, when you're talking about MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog, that's one of the best 1-2-3 punches in the entire league. Whether or not Jared Bednar decides to split those guys up, and he has split those guys up, but, you know, Tyson Barrie also having a career year for the Avalanche, you know, one of the top offensive defensemen in the league. I mean, they have other guys that can put the puck in the net. I mean, JT Compher has had a much better second half than a first half. Carl Soderberg, we know what he's done to the Jets this season. So, you know, just a nice story that the Avalanche are going to get into the playoffs, because, you know, it certainly looked like when Gabe Landeskog went out with that injury, it looked like their season was done.
Dave, moving to the Eastern Conference, a huge victory for the Blue Jackets over the Habs on Thursday night. Tonight, the Canadians obviously in town to face the Jets, and the Blue Jackets have the Predators in Nashville. I mean, this Columbus team, every time they take a step forward, at least since the trade deadline, they then seem to take two steps back. Is that victory over the Habs going to be enough to propel the Blue Jackets into the playoffs?
Well, I mean, I think it's not even necessarily that. I think it's if you look at the Montreal schedule, as we touched on when we were talking about Montreal, I mean, when you've got to face the Jets, you got to face Tampa Bay, you got to face Washington, you got to face Toronto, that to me is almost insurmountable. I don't know that the Hurricanes, I know, play the Flyers, and they play Pittsburgh, and they also play the Leafs to conclude their season. So I would say Carolina and Columbus both have easier paths to maintaining their wild card spots versus Montreal having to overtake one of them by, as Mark Dumont said, having to come and run the board against those three, four teams. I just don't see it for Montreal. I mean, it's been a phenomenal season. But to Columbus, to your point about Columbus, now they've won three in a row. So, I mean, it seems like they've kind of got it on track. Mm-hmm. We'll see if they can take this momentum into the playoffs.
They can do the Jets a favor tonight by beating the Predators in Nashville after the Preds won in Pittsburgh last night.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, you know, it's an interesting kind of the way everything's set up. But I think from a Columbus perspective, you're kind of coming together at the right time. You've got just enough room, and Montreal's got just a difficult enough schedule that I think from Columbus's perspective that they're probably fine.
When we come back, Brady Keeper has been one of the best stories in hockey this season and the last little while. We're going to be joined by his assistant coach at the University of Maine, former Manitoba Moose goaltender Alfie Michaud. He joins us next on the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Final hour here of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day, Jets and Habs tonight at 6 o'clock. Drew Mandel has left, so it's just going to be myself, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk for the final hour. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome in Alfie Michaud. He's the University of Maine assistant coach, and he's also a former goaltender for the Manitoba Moose. Alfie, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Morning, guys. Thank you for having me.
And Alfie, we brought you on to talk about Brady Keeper, who you coached at the University of Maine, and, you know, just one of the best stories of the year so far. He made his NHL regular season debut on Thursday night for the Panthers against the Ottawa Senators. He had a lot of his family and friends in attendance. I guess just starting off, I mean, how special was that for you? You have a very close relationship with Brady. How special was that? You saw Brady skating around the ice, you know, doing the old rookie welcome by his Panthers teammates, but. Just talk about, you know, what it was like to watch Brady's first NHL regular season game.
Well, it was, unfortunately, I didn't get to see it live. I actually was on a recruiting trip up in the north, northern Quebec. But, I got home. Obviously, I have the NHL package, so I watched it after. I know my wife and my girls you know, they had it on. They watched. They're ecstatic. Obviously, they got to know Brady on a personal level. But, you know, seeing it and following it, of course, on Twitter and everything, it's kind of, I guess I try to tell people, it's a proud uncle moment. You know, I'll never say I'm Anthony. That's his dad. And his dad's, you know, what you're seeing is he's gone to the ends of the earth for the kid. That's given him an opportunity to be able to hone his skills and do this. And, like I said, I caught up with him later in his life, and you know, but yeah, very proud as we all are at University of Maine. All, you know, all the kids, his teammates. I know a lot of them, you know, try to get on and watch the game, and I know Red, myself, and Benny. You know, the coaches there. You know, we were all trying to tune in, and yeah, like I said, we're all proud kind of uncles because you know, when kids come here, those are. You know, those are our kids, and we got them for 4 years. And in Brady's case, we only had them for two. But, you know, that's what we try to do here. We sell kids on the opportunity of getting an education, but you know, hopefully, you know, getting better at their hockey and moving on to the next level. And in Brady's case, you know, that dream came true here the other day.
Well, Alvy, was it lucky for Brady that he had an uncle like yourself who went through a similar experience, you know, played 3 years at the University of Maine, had that, you know, you were an undrafted player, you went to the AHL, then you eventually got a couple games in the NHL with the Vancouver Canucks. So was he able to rely upon you and your wealth of experience in that realm to know what to expect?
Yeah, I think that definitely didn't hurt, you know. No, it was good. We've talked a lot, especially when it was coming down to making that decision and the pros and cons, and obviously would have loved for him to stay. You know, we lost a great hockey player, but, you know, it's about these kids moving on and living their dreams. But, you know, I guess, you know, him and I traveled a very similar path, you know, late bloomers. You know, we both played with actually First Nation run junior hockey teams. I did in LeBret, Saskatchewan, which was a native owned team, much like Brady's team up in the Paw. And we both got lucky with playing with really good coaches. I know Brady had a great coach and mentor and Jason Smith and Doug Headley. Those guys did great jobs up in OCN. And that's what those teams did. You know, LeBret was, I think at the time, it was the first native run junior A team in Saskatchewan in the early 90s. And, you know, I probably, who knows what I would have been doing. I got that opportunity there, and I'd say, you know, we're probably 60-70% First Nation. And OCN is much the same for, well, you think of Jordan Tutu. He got his opportunity because of OCN. And so it's great to have those programs out there that are searching for those kids. I know Weiwei in the Manitoba Junior, you know, LaRange in Saskatchewan Junior, those guys are working hard to try to, you know, find those First Nation kids that can come in and play. And Brady, like I said before, is a beacon of hope for all these kids because now the proof is in the pudding that if you put in your work, you're going to have to go through some tough times when it comes to leaving home. And that was the case with Brady. You know, he had to leave his family where he was comfortable and live 2,000 miles away. But I think having, you know, somebody like me that's been through what he went through and then obviously being First Nation, you know, there was a comfort there for him, no question. And, it's all worked out for him. And we're, like I said, we couldn't be more happier.
We're joined by University of Maine assistant coach Alfie Michaud on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. We're talking about Florida Panthers defenseman Brady Keeper and his NHL debut on Thursday night. And Alfie, we have to ask you about, you know, more about Brady's story because I think it's been, you know, pretty well documented now that he almost quit hockey. And I think, you know, you could talk about, you know, the talent and how you saw a player when he was playing for OCN, as you mentioned, that, you know, had, you know, the opportunity and the skill to have a good career in Hockey East and potentially go to the NHL level. But we wanted to ask you about his character because obviously, you know, this is a special player, you know, a guy that hasn't had, you know, the typical path to the National Hockey League.
Well, you know, like you said, for Brady, you know, to, you know, he had to travel, he had to move at a young age, you know, he had to go to Norman, OCN, it's 4 hours, closer to five from where he's from. So he had to move away. You know, you're moving away at a young age, especially when you're up in those northern communities, because you don't have the resources that you have down in the South. Like I said, I grew up in Selkirk. Obviously, you got Winnipeg, 35 minutes down the road. So the resources are there. And for Brady and kids like him in the North, they don't have those, you know. I was just up in a small spot up in Northern Quebec. And, you know, those people are driving 6-7 hours to go play hockey games, you know. And you think of that, all those kids. Well, you think OCN, you know, they're traveling to Winnipeg every weekend to play hockey games. And that's a 7-8 hour hike. And that's where it gets tough and the expense that it takes to travel to all these places. Like I said, I've talked to people because we search high and low. And, you know, for those people to travel down into those southern communities and play, and hopefully with the hope of, you know, their son getting noticed or their daughter getting noticed, you know, that's a $2,000 weekend, you know, by the time you're paying for gas and travel and staying in hotels for 3 and 4 nights. And so like I said, his character, what he had to endure in that and being in that car, and you know, but the great thing, I guess, what I say is, I think he just had a family that just kind of, he didn't know any better. You know, he just thought, you know, that's a lot of those kids. They don't know any better. They just think this is kind of what you got to do. And I think that's a case for a lot of guys. I know that was a case for me. I didn't know any better. I just kind of did what you did because you're a kid. And that's the neat thing, that his parents let him dream that dream and didn't squash it. And, you know, but his character, his perseverance, obviously you're seeing it. It's shining bright right now that, yeah, he was, you know, I think any kid leaving home at a young age and leaving what's comfortable, you know, I would say, you know, every individual's probably thought of quitting once or twice. And is it all worth it? But for him to hang in there, and it definitely took some kicking in the butt sometimes, but then other times it took just being there to being an ear to listen. And like I said, we're all happy for him, and he's a great kid. And I just got off the phone with him not too long ago this morning, and just told him just to, you know, every time you get that opportunity, you just got to keep showing them. And that's never going to stop. If he wants to keep playing pro hockey, you got people nipping at your heels, and you're chasing people. And that's the reality of being a professional athlete. So, but he's, you know, he's got maybe a little bit of an advantage there because of where he's come from and how hard he's going to, you know, he had to scratch and claw to where he's at right now.
You know, Alfie, you talked about Brady being a, you know, an inspiration, a beacon of hope for the community. Is that just a testament to who he is and something that, you know, other leaders within the community will be able to point to Brady as an example? And conversely, is there an expectation or is there a desire from people like yourself or Brady? I mean, he's obviously young, but to give back to the community in some way?
Well, there's no question, you know, and that's all you can really do when you're going through this is you know, he's got a great personality. He's very quiet and shy, but when he lets you in, he's a great kid. He's got an infectious smile. You could see it on, you know, I watched the TSN feed there, the Ottawa feed, and you can see that he just enjoyed the moment. And, you know, so he has that personality, and, you know, people gravitate to that because he's having so much fun. And for him, it was, you know, a dream come true. And, you know, in a way he has a responsibility, but I think with him, it's a way he just carries himself. He's just him. He's not trying to be anything different. He's just a really good, genuine human being. And, you know, and that's, you know, to be a leader, you know, you just got to be who you are. And he understands that he can open up a lot of doors for these kids to just have that belief. And a lot of these kids have known Brady up in the North because everybody's been following him when he was with OCN because he was a star there. And then obviously he goes off to college and he does well there. So he was already a beacon of hope before this NHL, but obviously this is the National Hockey League. Now it's national, and it's, you know, it's a world thing because it's the best league in the world. So, it's one of those things. And And, you know, I think he's going to do great with it.
Alfie, unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, the University of Maine was eliminated from the Hockey East quarterfinals by Northeastern. But, you know, not only did Brady Keeper sign a pro contract with the Florida Panthers, but also Chase Pearson, co-captain, signed a two-year entry-level contract with the Detroit Red Wings. Is that kind of bittersweet for you as an assistant coach with the University of Maine men's hockey program to see players sign pro contracts? Because obviously, you know, you would rather have them in the lineup, but is that something where you're happy that they're going to continue their career at the pro level, but also kind of wishing that you could have these guys for next year?
Well, yeah, there's always that, right? Because, you know, with our jobs, it's about winning and losing, you know, and I got livelihood and just as the other coaches. So obviously when you lose two key cogs of the, you know, two big parts of our engine. But Maine hockey's done that. It's put guys onto the next level as far as National Hockey League contracts. And that's a part of the business. We all sign up for it. Would I be lying to say I'd love to have Chase and Brady in our lineup next year? Well, of course I would. But at the same time, like you said, we're proud uncles. You know, we sell family here at University of Maine, and to see our kids go off into the real world, so to speak, and for them to get to do what every kid, you know, playing hockey probably dreams of doing, to get NHL contracts and that. We've had actually, I think, four other guys between East Coast deals and American League deals are gone too, and that's what it's about. These guys get to keep playing hockey for a living. Like I said, I got to live it and do it. It's the greatest, you know, it's the greatest job on earth. And the second greatest job, you know, for me is being a coach, because I'm still part of hockey. And, you know, I owe everything to hockey. And just as these young men will find later on after, you know, they're done their careers, they'll realize and look back that, you know, hockey probably did a lot for them. And that's the neat thing about sport in general. It's a vehicle for a lot of these kids to shine and do things, and you know, in these guys' cases, they get to do it for a living. Their job every day is to get up and play hockey and do hockey. Like I said, having done that, you know, for a long time, there's nothing better, you know.
Alfie Michaud is the assistant coach for the University of Maine Black Bears, and he's also a resident, born in Selkirk, Manitoba, and a former goaltender for the Manitoba Moose. Alfie, thanks so much for joining us this morning and talking about Brady Keeper's NHL debut with the Florida Panthers, because I think it's a debut that nobody is soon going to forget.
Oh, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, Alfie, have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Bye now.
Right, let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Santa Lucia Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
And early on, we got a fight. It's Paul Byron and Weegar dropping the gloves. Byron, oh, he takes a big left. And Paul Byron is down. It's him and Weegar. And you hope that he's all right. Oh, man.
Now, Paul Byron is not all right right now. Oh, very, man. Very shaky.
Paul Byron taking a series of lefts from Mackenzie Weegar of the Florida Panthers. Weegar is a tough customer. I mean, Paul Byron is a solid hockey player, but he's not known as an enforcer. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk. It's a Santa Lucia Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Canadians' final regular season home game of the season tonight at 6 o'clock. Afternoon ride is going to kick everything off at 3 o'clock. Then you've got the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show with Kevin O and friends at 5 o'clock, live from Boston Pizza. And of course, as I mentioned, the game tonight between the Jets and Habs is at 6 o'clock PM Central. Dave, this segment, I want to talk about the Paul Byron Mackenzie Weegar fight, but I also want to talk about the code, because Paul Byron's agent, JP Barry, had some very interesting comments. Pierre LeBrun had the article up on theathletic.com, and this is the direct quote from JP Barry, who's with CAA Sports, of course. This wasn't a hockey fight, said Barry. Paul knew he had to deal with it then or likely later. Paul probably gives up 5 inches and 50 pounds to a very tough player. How is this the code? And this brought up, I thought, a really interesting conversation up on TSN.ca between Craig Button and Mike Johnson talking about, you know, the fighting code. And we know that fighting has gone down year after year, and it seems like, you know, we might not even have fighting in hockey 3 or 4 years from now. It seems crazy to say that, but you just don't see, you know, those prototypical enforcers anymore. I want to play the audio from the conversation between Craig Button and Mike Johnson, and then I want to get your reaction, Dave and Sean, because Drew's not on the show anymore, so we kicked Drew out, and we're going to bring Shawnee in. But we're going to talk about the fighting code in hockey. So here's Craig Button and Mike Johnson from earlier this week.
Alongside Craig Button and Mike Johnson, guys, watching Paul Byron make his way off the ice on the wobbly legs was an awful thing to watch. And knowing everything that we know, the concussions come from getting punched repeatedly in the head. Is it time for the code to be outdated and terminated?
Well, I mean, I think the code continually changes. I mean, the code is basically expected behavior and consequences to behaviors. And I think that has been changing. And it should, because I guess the code was written when? The 60s, the 50s, I don't know, but life is a lot different now than then, so it is continually evolving, and it should.
Well, so you have the code, the players talk about the code, right? And one of the things I believe is that the players are on the 200 by 85, and there's going to be things that happen in the course of a game, and, you know, that players feel that they have to deal with, and you got to trust them. You might not like it, you might not agree with them. But my question to this is, would everybody be complaining about the code if they, Paul Byron, didn't get hit like that? Because just I think that everybody's outraged by the punch and the fact that he got knocked cold, right? But there's other times when this has gone on in the game.
But I think that's part of the problem, is that you have a guy who's clearly a much smaller, doesn't fight like as often as Mackenzie Weegar does, willing to put himself on the line to respect some unwritten, unsure of code and put himself at harm's way. And I think maybe we have to change that perspective, that even getting in the fight, even if you don't get hurt, you're putting yourself at risk for something like that happening. And that has to change.
Speaking of changes, J.P. Barrie, the agent for Paul Byron, went on to say, this is not just about this incident. He's saying, and I quote now, I truly believe this exact situation is Exhibit A for reexamining our current rules for fighting, end quote. So he's suggesting maybe we learn from an event like this and say, let's change the rules for fighting so this whole code thing gets abolished, whether they like it or not. Agree or disagree?
Well, the code isn't like fighting. Listen, this whole idea about fighting being eliminated, no, that it's about the rules about fighting. There's fighting in baseball. It's not tolerated. There's fighting in football. You're thrown out of the game. So there's not this idea about it's about, okay, you're going to get a game misconduct for fighting. So what are we re-examining here? The players are in a confined area competing, right? I'll tell you a story. In 1992, we had Darren Hatcher on our team, and we were playing Detroit. Darren Hatcher's a big, strong guy, and he was playing big and strong. But he was getting underneath the skin of some of the Detroit Red Wings, guys like Bob Prober. Well, they wanted to fight him. Bob Gainey said, don't fight him. But he also told the team, right, I don't want him fighting. So, you know, there's a lot of different angles to this, and I know that it looks really terrible, and Mackenzie Weegar feels terrible and everything. But at some point in time, you got all the players talking about it. Andrew Shaw is talking about it, his teammate. And if you feel compelled...
I don't know, Craig. I think you have to protect the players from themselves at times.
I agree with
you. Because the guys will go to that old school mentality. So to me, and we talk to the players. There's an informal poll done by the NHLPA. The players always vote almost unanimously to keep fighting or that they want fighting in the game. So the chance of it coming out by the players' prerogative is not there. What I would do if I could change the rules is I would change the rules so that you would get kicked out of the game if you got in a fight. So if it was a spontaneous emotional reaction, you're that upset, you're out of the game, and that's fine, and so is the other guy. And the other case is if you get instigated upon, then you can stay in the game so you can't take advantage of forcing Connor McDavid to fight and get everyone kicked out of the game. And if you did that, this wouldn't have happened last night. Fights like this wouldn't happen because Paul Byron's not going to risk getting kicked out of the game early on if he knows that he's going to engage in a natural fight. And you say we have to police ourselves. The league should police them as well. If that means stiffer suspensions, that should be enough of a deterrent for hits like Paul Byron. That's where it has to go as well.
But the onus on the players as well. I think step number one for eliminating the code is when you allow Paul Byron to say no to the challenge on the ice, knowing that he can get back to the bench and his teammates and his coach are good with it. When that happens, I think that's the beginning of the end of the code.
All right, so you just heard Craig Button, Mike Johnson, and Gino Retta. That was up on TSN.ca. That's hockey. We only have about 60 seconds here, guys, because we're going to bring in Mitch Peacock, voice of the Manitoba Moose on TSN Radio 1290. And I want to get Shawnee in here. So quickly, guys, Mike Johnson mentioned that he thinks it's time that there should be game misconducts for fighting. And if you get into a fight in the last 5 or 10 minutes of a game, should you get an automatic one-game suspension? I want to get Dave's opinion, and I want to get Sean's opinion. Does the NHL, the NHLPA, do they have to start to penalize fighting with more minutes in the penalty box and possibly automatic game misconducts, game suspensions for fights in the last 5 or 10 minutes of a game?
I'm not going to lie. I thought the code was up, down, left, right, left, right. Anyways, but the point is, I think it's a function of player. If you ask players, they're not going to try and get rid of it. So sometimes the league has to step in and make the decision for you. Now, we see what happens in fights. You know, there was a fight yesterday in, we can ask Mitch about it, in San Antonio. Fans get up. Fans get excited. Now, there's repercussions to fights. We recognize this. Peter Stojkovic got punched in the head. He had to leave the game. So, you know, sometimes do you have to make a decision for the betterment of the game, for the betterment and the well-being of these players who aren't going to make the decisions for themselves? Sure, but it's something that's going to have to be mandated by the league. And, you know, handing out harsher sentences, I think, makes it a more... You know, you're less likely to do it if there's a reason, if you really need to go after a guy, if a guy's done something that's crossed that line, the code, if you will, then you know that, hey, I'm going to be in the box for 10 minutes or I'm going to be out of the game. Well, okay, but so that really had to cross the line. It's not just because you're trying to change the momentum of the game or something like that.
Sean, are we at the point, just quickly, we've got about 30 seconds here, but are we at the point where you have to start giving out game misconducts for fighting, or maybe give, you know, 10 minutes for fighting as opposed for five? Like, where are we at here? Because we know that, you know, fighting in hockey just doesn't have the same role that it used to.
Yeah, where we're at is that it's clearly evident that if you want to use penalties as a deterrent to fighting, you are going to need to increase the length of said penalties, whether it's a 10-minute, whether it's a game. I mean, that's the only way that you really are going to be able to imply some punitive measures, is if you just take away these guys' ice time and realize that, you know, after 5 minutes of fighting, you will not be allowed back on the ice. You will have to serve an entire game.
Yeah, and I think an automatic game misconduct for fighting is too much, and I realize, you know, that Huss has talked about this.
But wouldn't it be a good deterrent?
Well, it would be a good deterrent. I think it's too far, though. I personally like, you know, 10 minutes for fighting as opposed for 5 minutes for fighting, because I think you would see fighting go down even more.
And that's what I mean. I think
we know, yeah, guys, that fighting has already gone down, but I think to give a game misconduct just for two guys getting into a fight is too much. But I think it's a very interesting conversation. It's a conversation we're going to continue to have on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a conversation that you'll see, you know, more on TSN 1290 and really across the hockey world. Okay, guys, we're going to head to break now. After the break, we're going to be joined by Mitch Peacock, voice of the Manitoba Moose. The Moose had a big win last night over the San Antonio Rampage, and they've got another game tonight in San Antonio. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Santa Lucia Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Two segments to go here. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Canadians tonight at 6 o'clock. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by the voice of the Manitoba Moose on TSN Radio 1290, Mitch Peacock. Mitch, good morning, and thanks so much for making some time for us this morning.
Yeah, good morning. Happy to do it.
Mitch, huge 2-1 win, obviously, for the Manitoba Moose yesterday over the San Antonio Rampage, and a bit of an unlikely goal scorer last night for the Moose. Two goals, in fact, from Brandon Manitoba's Brian White. I mean, it's been obviously a very difficult year for White with, you know, the concussion issues, but what kind of impact has Ryan White had on this team, not just on the ice with his goal scoring, but just in the dressing room with all of his, you know, pro experience in the NHL and the American Hockey League?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, and something that, you know, maybe on the surface you wouldn't pick up on if you're a casual fan, but talking to the coaching staff, talking to any of the players, they'll tell you that Ryan White has been just a critical part of the team this year. It's so important in terms of being able to pass along bits of information, bits of encouragement, wisdom. The guy who's been around the game so long, played over 300 games in the NHL, played in places like Montreal with the Canadiens, and you know, that's just a kind of maturity and experience that you don't find everywhere. And so he's proven to be an invaluable resource, helping young players along, even helping experienced players along in terms of helping them to be comfortable in their roles as leaders on the team. So he's had a significant impact on the team, even when not in the lineup, maybe even especially when not in the lineup, considering how long he was out. He helped the team to keep the right mindset as it tried to battle back from being in last place in the overall standings at the holiday break. But then coming in here and getting 5 goals in 10 games, that's a massive bonus. And he's just having fun playing the game. He's so grateful to be healthy. I had a chance to talk to him after the game last night, and he's just loving this. And I think he's really giving the whole team a boost with that attitude and that energy that he brings over and above that maturity.
You know, Mitch, the Moose looked like, you know, they were in a little bit of trouble in that first period, you know, down 1-0. After 20 minutes, they go in, and more importantly, they lose Tucker Poolman, who collides with Klim Kostin behind the net. He's gone for the game. They lose Peter Stoyakovich, who gets sucker punched by Jordan Nolan at the end of the first period. So it doesn't look good to start that second period for the Manitoba Moose. But, you know, I don't know what Coach Vincent told them. And obviously, they had a bit of an advantage in that. They had 3 minutes of a major still. But, I mean, they came out to play. I mean, they outshot San Antonio 13-4. What did you see from being in the building that Manitoba Moose squad did? Shorthanded, obviously, Peter Stoyakovich came back. But without Tucker Poolman in that second period to take advantage and really take control of that game.
You know, I think sometimes what happens with a team that is around that playoff line is they feel good about parts of their game, but they don't necessarily have that overwhelming confidence coming into each and every game. And so sometimes I think with these teams that are flirting around that line, that they take time sometimes to get into a game, to sort of get comfortable amongst themselves, feel good about themselves, see what the opponent is offering. They're sometimes a bit careful easing into games. They've had, as you know, Dave, at times trouble at the start, and then other times when they've worked on the start, it's come around and been better. But I thought they had to kind of feel their way into the game last night. A strange opponent in San Antonio with so many players out of the lineup due to injury. They've got one entire line from Tulsa, DCHL. They got a veteran goaltender who's won a Calder Cup. So I don't think they knew exactly what they were getting into, and they didn't feel great about the way the game went on Wednesday night. So first period, I think they sort of had to sort their way through it. And as you said, with those big obstacles and Poolman and Stoyakovich going out, a very difficult situation. But I think that they felt after that first period of play, all right, there's better in our team. We can be the better team in this game. We need these points. Let's just stay focused and get to work. As you said, they got a little bit of momentum from the time and the major penalty assessed to Jordan Nolan. And then at 5-on-5, they were able to get things going. And I think that another element in that is that maybe one that you don't see when you take a first glance at the game, and that is that Mikhail Burden's puck handling played a significant part in that game last night. In fact, after the game, Drew Bannister, the head coach of the Rampage, was talking about how they basically had to change their approach to trying to enter the zone because of Burden's ability to get out and move the puck around. And so I think that the combination of the Moose being very effective in shortening the time that San Antonio could spend in the Moose zone and the Moose being inspired to get forward and make something happen offensively really was overwhelming in some ways for San Antonio and got the Moose that lead and gave them some confidence going to the third.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by voice of the Manitoba Moose, Mitch Peacock. The Manitoba Moose and the San Antonio Rampage meet tonight at 7 p.m. They wrap up their 5-game road trip, and then they're back home for games at Bell MTS Place. And Mitch, you know, they pick up a huge 2 points, the Manitoba Moose do, but they've still got, you know, the Milwaukee Admirals and the Rockford IceHogs also with aspirations of going to the playoffs. They still trail the Texas Stars. But at this point in the season, you've only got, it's 7 games, I believe, left in the season, or 8 games left in the season. With only 8 games left in the season, is it inevitable that you're watching the out-of-town scoreboard, or do you think Pascal Vincent has this Moose team just focusing on each game at hand and knowing that they truly do control their own destiny?
Well, I'd say it's both, to be honest. I think they're human beings. They're competitive guys. They're competitive people. And I know that they, at times have talked about looking at the standings and being aware of the situation they're in. So I don't think they're ignorant, and I do think they're curious. But I also think that the coaching staff and the experienced players on the team have been very good at saying, okay, now there's a time to put that aside and focus on what we need to do to be successful. I talked more and more in recent days about playing Moose hockey, understanding their systems, understanding the focus and the mindset that they have to have. So I think they know what they're getting into, but they also know what they have to do to be successful. And I think that's an important combination.
Now, Mitch, this is a team that, as you touched on in one of your earlier answers, was dead last in the AHL at the Christmas break. And we've talked about the reset and how this team was able to do it. But, I mean, I keep saying to the players, because I keep expecting somewhat of a different answer, but they haven't given one, that how tiresome that must be to be constantly in a playoff mode. But if this team can do what they've managed to do, which is continue to push and make a playoff you know, and get a playoff spot. Just how dangerous are they, considering they've been playing playoff hockey since Christmas?
Yeah, I mean, you always wonder. I think it's one of those things where maybe at the end of the season, wherever that may be, if it's a regular season or following the playoffs, I think the players will probably admit to you that it was a very difficult grind, a very taxing grind. But I also think that it's very satisfying for them. Whatever ends up happening here, there's going to be a great degree of satisfaction because they salvaged a season that was headed the wrong way. Players getting back from injury, players finding their games, this team really coming together as a team. It sounds a bit cliche, but there's no question. These guys really enjoy working together. They play for each other. Nobody wants to let anybody down. And so I think that it's demanding. I think it's taxing to do what they've done and to go through what they've gone through. But I think it's also tremendously rewarding and satisfying. And so I think these players, whatever happens here, are going to feel very good about what they've been able to do over this last part of the year. It's sure been fascinating to watch. And I know, Dave, you follow the team as close as anyone. And, you know, when they broke for the break in December, I don't think they had any sense that this was going to happen. And here they are with a chance. A very tough schedule to finish, it should be pointed out. They've got 7 games to go after tonight and 4 of them against teams in first place when we talk about 2 at Bakersfield and 2 at Chicago. So it's not going to be easy, but they're giving themselves every opportunity.
And Mitch, final one for you, but do we have any sense, did Coach Vincent after the game say anything about Tucker Pullman's status? Because obviously he didn't finish the game, unlike Peter Stoykovich, who came back. So do you have any idea at this point whether he'll be in the game tonight for the Manitoba Moose?
I don't know yet. The coach is meeting with the players. There's a couple of meetings coming up, one at 12, one at 12:15. I'm planning to talk with Pascal Vincent at 12:30. So I have no sense really at this point whether Tucker would be available or not. Charles David Beaudoin has jumped in and filled in well when the Moose need help on the blue line. So I suppose he would be the next option if Pullman isn't able to play tonight. But clearly what Tucker's been doing has been exceptional. He leads the Moose blue line in points per game and has been playing heavy minutes and playing in all situations. You saw last night probably the impact of him being out, and certainly they don't want to have him out for any extended stretch, but we'll learn more later today.
The Moose and the San Antonio Rampage meet tonight at 7 o'clock. Mitch is going to have the call on moosehockey.com. The road trip is going to end after tonight, and then the Moose are going to be back home for a 4-game homestand. That's going to start Tuesday, April 2nd. The Moose are going to be home to the Bakersfield Condors. Mitch, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and we're going to be following that Moose-San Antonio game while we're at the rink watching the Jets and Habs.
Sounds great. Appreciate the time. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Have a good weekend, Mitch.
Thanks, Mitch.
Take care.
All right. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the collapse of the Buffalo Sabres. It looked like earlier in the season, the Buffalo Sabres might grab one of those wild card spots in the Eastern Conference, but the Sabres have won only one game of their last 10. They're a complete tire fire right now. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Critical mistakes that we just make every night. That's it. I mean, you watch the games, you see it. So, I mean, everyone has to be better. It's just the National Hockey League, you know. Got to be better. Everyone. Myself. Everybody. Everybody has to be better. We can't go out there and play like that and expect to win.
Jack Eichel and his Buffalo Sabres having a rough end to the season here. Since the NHL trade deadline in late February, the Sabres have won 2 of 16 games. They are 2-13-1 in their last 16 games. They've lost 5 games in a row, and they play the New York Islanders tonight in Long Island. Islanders obviously just defeated the Winnipeg Jets, and it's probably going to be another loss for the Sabres unless they pull a rabbit out of their hat. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Final segment here. And, you know, the Sabres guys, I think there were some expectations that this team might be able to squeak into the playoffs. But, you know, the way they've played here down the stretch, you heard Jack Eichel's comments and you wonder if Phil Housley's job is in danger. But you almost have to start looking at next season and the direction they're heading, because there's a chance that even though Jeff Skinner has been a fantastic story, one of the best acquisitions, I think, in the NHL this year, there's a good chance that they're going to lose Jeff Skinner. Obviously, they could sign Skinner. He's going to be looking for big money. You're probably talking about, what, $7-8 million a year based on his 37-plus goals, right? So when you're talking about the Sabres, where do we start with this team? Because Rasmus Dahlin, selected first overall, he was going to obviously be, you know, the savior for the Sabres team. And then you throw in the aforementioned Jeff Skinner, Connor Sheary. I mean, the big Ryan O'Reilly trade that obviously is not looking good right now, considering that, you know, Patrick Berglund is not playing hockey anymore. So where do you go from now if you're Jason Botterill, Dave? Because this team is way out of it. As I mentioned, you know, they're fourth last in the Eastern Conference, 72 points, the worst road record in the entire league. They only have 11 wins on the year. Just truly remarkable that they only have those 11 wins away from Buffalo. So if you're Jason Botterill, let's put the coaching decision aside, because there is a chance, obviously, that Phil Housley is no longer going to be back as the head coach of the Sabres. But what do you do here? Because you look at a team like the Carolina Hurricanes, who have a good shot at making the playoffs and getting one of those last wild card spots. But what do you do here? You can't rebuild. Do you get aggressive in the offseason? What do you do? Because this, I think you would agree, has been beyond a disappointing season.
Well, I mean, remember, this is a Sabres team in November that won 10 straight and matched their franchise best record. And this is a team, as you touched on off the top, was a team that everyone was just like, all right, well, Buffalo's finally kind of got it all together. They're figuring it out. They're on a run. They're going to, you know, not necessarily be challenging for a Stanley Cup championship this season, but similar almost to like a Carolina Hurricanes, like they've been puttering along and you kind of expected this organization to be able to turn that corner. And was Phil Housley, now that he was getting his chance as the head coach, to, you know, really be able to put his mark on this team and do the things he needed to do. But I mean, to your point, as this team can't win away from Buffalo, 11 wins, that's just brutal. 1-8-1 in their last 10. I mean, and again, when you've got guys like Skinner, if you're Jeff Skinner, do you really want to re-sign in Buffalo right now? I mean, again, from his perspective, it's close to probably to his home base, but I mean, is this team one or two pieces away from being a team that's going to be challenging, or can you make that money somewhere else in a more competitive environment? And you know, it's interesting because Jack Eichel, you know, a leader in that organization, a leader on that team. But how many years now already have we been hearing the frustration just in these interviews? And I get it. I mean, it's got to be beyond frustrating for guys who win and who have so much personal success and even team success when they're younger. And then you come into these, I'm not going to call the Sabres a tire fire because I don't know if that's fair, but like organizations that are struggling, and you have to, you know, it's a slow process. It doesn't happen overnight. You don't become a Stanley Cup contender in a year or two. Generally, it takes, you know, a number of years, whether it's, you know, through acquisitions or through the draft and develop model we've seen here in Winnipeg. But to me, I mean, again, if you're Jason Botterill, you've got to be thinking about the happiness of your players, because, I mean, they're clearly expressing their displeasure and they understand that it's them, but I don't know. I mean, again, like I said, it's easier to remove a coach than it is to trade your entire team.
Like, is this a leadership problem, Dave? Because, you know, Jack Eichel is the leader of this team, but he's only 22 years old, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, it's his fourth NHL season now, but, you know, he hasn't ever been in the playoffs. I mean, this is a guy that hasn't had that success at the NHL level. And, you know, you wonder if, in addition to acquiring a number one goaltender, because for me, that's where it really begins and ends. I mean, Carter Hutton is brought in from the St. Louis Blues, and he was a fine backup for the St. Louis Blues last year, but he has not been very good this year. And Linus Ullmark has also not been very good. In fact, he's been worse than Carter Hutton. So you have to think that Jason Botterill is going to go after a number one goaltender.
Probably like someone like Robin Leonard.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, but I mean, that has been an issue for the Sabres for so many years, and we have Marty Biron on the program regularly, and he's talked about how the Sabres just haven't gotten that level of goaltending that they need to take the next step and be a playoff team. But you wonder, Dave, if Jason Botterill is going to address that leadership void in the offseason and maybe bring in a veteran presence, because obviously Ryan O'Reilly was one of the leaders of the team, but they traded him. But, you know, to me, that is something that has to be talked about more. This Sabres team just, I think not only do they not have an identity, but I think they have a bit of a leadership void there at the top.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, and again, like I said, it's interesting because you know, sometimes you hear frustration bleed out, and we don't obviously do a ton of Sabres post-game, sound bites here. Obviously, it's more just a function of that. So we'll see what happens in Buffalo, but it'll be a very interesting offseason.
That's going to do it for us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to all of our guests. In the first hour, we had Jason Bell and Mark Dumont of The Athletic. We were also joined by John Mattis, University of Maine assistant coach Alfie Michaud. Just an absolutely awesome interview talking about Florida Panthers defenseman Brady Keeper and his NHL debut. If you missed that interview or if you missed any of the show today, that's going to be obviously available on podcast. Go on to LegalCurve.com, subscribe, and download the podcast. We were also joined by Mitch Peacock, Manitoba Moose play-by-play broadcaster, just about 15 minutes ago. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Linden Market Dental Center. Big game tonight between the Jets and Habs. It all kicks off with the afternoon ride at 3. Thanks for listening.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.